हरि ओम सहना भवतु सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्वी नवधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासवि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे।
Men of small knowledge are very much attached to the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend various fruitive activities for elevation to heavenly planets, resultant good birth, power, and so forth. Being desirous of sanctification and opulent life, they say that there is nothing more than this. In other words, they say this just because they are attached to the idea of sense enjoyment, and they want to present themselves as the ultimate scholars of the Vedas. I think, can you hear that there? Okay. Any Mataji? I think we should keep this place for the ladies. It's like someone, let's say someone is, apples are his favorite fruit, so he makes out the He makes up a philosophy that this is the best fruit. Everybody should eat apples. But let's say we know mango is the king of the fruit. So it's not consistent. It's not actually a philosophy. It's just it's not real philosophy. It's just following the senses. What the senses say, they present as their philosophy. So they can be peaceful in their mind. They don't have to feel guilty. Because this is according to my philosophy. The real goal of religion is not to achieve temporary material pleasure by karma, as proposed by the Veda Vadaratas, or to become God by mental speculation, as proposed by the Maya Pakrita Gyanas. The ultimate purpose of religion is to bring one back to Godhead by teaching him how to act with proper knowledge, Ishavasya or Buddhi Yoga. So here we're dealing with these four types of people. The Mudas, then the Naradamas, Maya Pakrita Gyanas, and Asuram Bhavam Ashvita, and Asuras. So usually, how they appear in the Varnas, usually the Mudas will be the Shudras, then the Naradamas will be the Vaishyas, then Maya Pakrita Gyanas will be the Gyanis, that means the Brahmanas, and the Asuras will be the administrators, the Kshatriyas, those who actually run the country. It's not necessary that they appear always in this order, but usually this is how it works. The ultimate purpose of religion is to bring one back to Godhead. Okay, Srila Prabhupada defines Buddha Yoga in Bhagavad Gita, purport.
Okay. Buddha Yoga itself is action in Krishna consciousness. That is the highest intelligence. Buddhi means intelligence and yoga means mystic activities or mystic elevation. When one tries to go back home, back to Godhead, and takes fully to Krishna consciousness and devotional service, this action is called Buddhi Yoga. In other words, Buddhi Yoga is the process by which one gets out of the entanglement of this material world.
So it's a process. It involves working with the senses. It's not just sitting idly. This explanation of Buddhi Yoga is in line with the commentaries of the Acharyas on Mantra 9. Both Vedanta Deshika and Baladevi Vibhushan agree that performance of karma or jnana on their own is not sufficient and lead to frustration only. Vedanta Deshika writes, Vedanta Deshika is from, he's the successor of Ramanuja. He's from Sri Sampradaya. Those who excessively attach to enjoyment and power perform with absorbed mind karma, devoid of jnana, enter into very dense ignorance. Those engaged only in knowledge, giving up karmas suitable for their qualifications, enter even into greater ignorance than those absorbed in karma alone. So this is in line with what we were talking before, that if someone is just ignorant, simple ignorant person, then he cannot be so bad. But if someone is intelligent and he gives up karmas suitable for his qualifications, that means he's rejecting his duties without connection to Krishna, then he can create even more troubles, because he's more dangerous, he's more clever, and he can misguide many, many other people. So karmis and jnanis, they don't actually get any substantial result if they just follow karma or jnana.
Why yes? Jnana alone is worse than karma?
It is, as we explained already, it could be worse in a sense that if we're talking about impersonalists, we'll see also later on. Actually, the impersonalists, the Mayavadis, with their rejection of the very idea of having relationships and having persons, personal interaction between people, and between the soul and God, rejecting this completely, actually they encourage material sense gratification. Prabhupada will make this clear a little later, we'll see. Because if you don't give any alternative to the people who are naturally attached to sense gratification, to material sense gratification, if you don't explain to them that, okay, by this process of bhakti, you will get sense gratification, but higher type of sense gratification. And you'll get emotion interaction, but it will be spiritual. And you actually enjoy more, because you connect yourself with God, and this is the real thing. Then, if you just reject this, the very idea of this, then people won't be attracted at all. And they'll reject spirituality at all. And then they'll just absorb themselves in what is available here. This is one aspect why they are more dangerous. Because they misguide the innocent people. Actually, they encourage gross sanctification. And they are very proud because they have knowledge, and this will make them more atheistic. They won't accept God consciousness. They'll be against it. They'll fight against it. Is that okay? So karma and jnana on their own cannot lead to any substantial results, because they are meant to be combined. When we perform action, this is the element of karma, then with knowledge, the element of jnana, and meanwhile we are meditating on Krishna, this will be jnana, the element of jnana. Ashtanga yoga, meditation. And then this is done for Krishna, to please him. This is bhakti. So all this combined is buddhi yoga. When all these elements are combined, then we have something very dynamic. And this is the main topic of Bhagavad Gita, buddhi yoga. This is what Krishna recommends to Arjuna. Because only karma, if someone performs only karma, then Krishna makes this very clear in Bhagavad Gita. He says, Kshine punya marti lokam vishanti. He attains only repeated birth and death. He goes to the heavenly planets and comes back. Although it looks very progressive, because he's moving forward. He's going from this planet to higher planet. But at the end he comes back, and then it's just a vicious circle. He doesn't go anywhere. He stays inside the material universe. And then jnana, if someone is attached to the process of jnana only, then he has actually superior knowledge in a sense. He has superior knowledge from the karmis. Because at least he has understood that we have to get out of the material world. And inside this material universe he will never be happy. That much they know. But the problem is, as we saw before, is that they tend to reject the
activities,
emotions, emotional interactions, the idea of person, the idea of personal God. They tend to reject all this. And this is the weakness. In this sense, they are in a weaker position than the karmis. At least the karmis, they are personalists. Because they believe in this personal exchange. This is their goal. Of course, it is on the lower platform. Another problem with the jnana alone is that this higher knowledge, although it's higher and it's spiritual, actually is not the purifying agent by itself. Knowledge alone cannot purify. Only the application of knowledge in activities, this will purify the soul. And this is again the main process of recommended in Bhagavad Gita. So one have to apply this knowledge by performing Naishkarmya, and in this way he will be free from material world. But Naishkarmya, Prabhupada says that to the level of Naishkarmya one can reach this level only if he follows his prescribed duties according to the Shastra, to the Vedas. Why is this so? Because, let's say one doesn't follow the duties prescribed in the Veda, that means he'll have to follow another set of duty. He'll have to work somehow. And if he rejects the Vedic authority, that means he's doing this because he's attached to something else. But Naishkarmya, going to the level of Naishkarmya, means that we are working with detachment there. And how someone with so strong attachment can perform duty on the level of Naishkarmya, it's not possible. Therefore, he has to purify himself to the point that he accepts the Vedic authority, accepts the duties according to the Varnas and Ashramas, and then on this foundation, he can perform Naishkarmya, detachment. Otherwise, it's not possible. Is that clear? Okay. According to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, those who cultivate knowledge with the goal of impersonal liberation enter into darker ignorance. Another point here, in the previous purport from Vedanta Deshika. Those engaged only in knowledge, giving up karmas suitable for their qualifications. Giving up karmas suitable for their qualifications. This is also a stumbling block for a jnani, usually. Because let's say someone rejects his duties. And he takes sannyas, let's say. But then later on he finds out that he doesn't feel comfortable in this position. He's not happy, and he's not satisfied, and he needs to do something. So what he will do if he has rejected all his duties? How he will purify himself from this position? It's a nightmare. you are not, you don't feel satisfied, not you don't feel happy, and you cannot work because you have taken sannyas. This is the idea of, at least in the impersonal sense of, in personal tradition, they take sannyas and then all work is forbidden. So it's very precarious situation. Krishna mentions this in Mahabharata actually. He says that he's speaking to Yudhishthira, and he says to be in such position as a renunciate and to hanker, to think, to meditate on sense, material sense objects for sense gratification. Krishna says, let this be the share of our enemies. In other words, this is one of the worst thing that can happen to someone. So it's a big problem. You wanted to say something?
Is that the position of a devotee, for example, who should get married but gives it up because he thinks it's troublesome?
Oh. Could be, but still, as a devotee, he has Krishna on his side. If he's sincere, it will be just a temporary situation. And if he's sincere, then he will get purified, and then he will see what is the right thing for him to do. He'll get married, or he'll perform his duties, he'll engage the senses, get purified, or he will not get married and just continue as sincere renunciant. One of these two ultimately will happen. If he's not crooked.
What attached to this
idea?
Attached to his attachments?
Yes, to the position of someone who is
laziness, cannot give up.
Yeah. Because most of the people, they should actually go through these ashrams, ashvarna, all these ashrams. Yeah.
What do you mean when you say crooked?
Well, crooked means, as Prabhuji mentioned, someone is just, he has some misgiving, and then he's attached to it. He doesn't want to let go. He doesn't want to understand. It's like, it is very easy to wake up someone who is sleeping. Well, in most cases, it's easy, relatively. But someone who is not sleeping, it's impossible to wake him up. He just doesn't want to be bothered. And a sincere person, he's just overwhelmed by some bad habit or material desire, but he doesn't have any problems with the philosophy, and he knows if I apply in the process, then gradually I'll purify myself by Krishna's mercy. This is also described in 11th canto of Bhagavatam. Krishna says there, my devotee sometimes I'm paraphrasing here. My devotee sometimes he's acting in a wrong way, but then he feels so much, he's repentant. He says, "Well, this is like I'm the worst of all devotees. I'm shameful to devotees." And then in this way he purifies himself. And gradually he goes up to the standard. He's not crooked. Is that okay? Yes, Madhuri.
There was an enthusiastic devotee and told me, "I write your paper, my weaknesses, point to point, and every day I see the paper and try to change that." And later on, I heard that it's a massive good fixing of mind in this way. Because,
I couldn't follow the previous. It's much better to keep it in the mind, you said, or?
Yeah, in this poem.
Better than writing on paper.
But I said that she was told that it is not good to focus on the negative things.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Later I heard this. Mm-hmm. So what is the balances? So we have to see our weaknesses, but we have to see our good qualities in our concept life, and we have to strengthen it. So what is the balances? This
It's the same as always remember Krishna, never forget him. It's the same principle applies. If usually we're working on this principle of attachment, to attach ourselves to Krishna, and then if we are, if the mind is overwhelmed or flooded by spiritual impressions, samskaras, then it just, we don't have, there is no place for Maya, you can say. But if this doesn't work like 100%, then we should also take care of the other part of the process, never forgetting Krishna. And this is in the context of this question, that means to take care of our own arthas also. But ultimately, in Bhagavad Gita also it is stated that Raso Varjam Rasopiyasa Param Drishtva Nivartante. Only when we have superior taste, only then we will be able to give up all the bad habits and anarthas. So that means up to a level of bhava, there will be some subtle contaminations in the heart. But the way to deal with this, to destroy this, is to actually to develop strong taste, Krishna consciousness. And what is the balance? It's a very individual thing, and you have to see what works for you. But I also heard one sannyasi was telling me, before he took sannyas, he was contemplating, should I take sannyas or not? And then what he did, he told me, he wrote down the good things about taking sannyas and then the bad things. And then he kind of waited them and he made up his mind, and now he's sannyasi. So there is also a place for this. Of course we shouldn't concentrate on the negative side. This, because this is the process of the impersonalists. They take this process. We just reject the material world, reject our anarthas, reject our bad qualities. But we also do this, but we only do this in connection with the spiritual, with the positive, with the Krishna consciousness activities. Only this connection we reject something. Otherwise we don't reject it just for its own sake. So, yes?
And if I can just make a comment, Maharaj, I asked him a question similar to this, and he said that whatever you're focusing on, what is in the mind, you will attract that. So you have to focus on the positive aspect of giving up this anartha and try to focus on that instead, because if you're focusing on the bad thing in the behavior, that is what you will attract.
Very good point. Did you hear? Yes. Thank you. So we are not against the secret, the love. We just know the whole picture. Okay. According to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, those who cultivate knowledge with the goal of impersonal liberation enter into darker ignorance because they, quote, do not receive the shelter of the spiritual Shakti unless they perform bhakti. Thus they, absorbed in vidya, enter into a darker region where the Atma seems to be destroyed. If the Jiva does not establish a relation with Paramatma in this material world, he cannot be liberated from matter. When a person gives up the variety of qualities found in this world as despicable, He then becomes attached to something without qualities, which creates a great obstacle for the jiva. A great obstacle for the jiva, because the jiva is, by nature, is a person, and it is natural for the jiva to be attracted and related to another person. Therefore, the acharyas say that the result of all this hard austerities the Mayavadis, the impersonalists, they do, the result is just the reward for all this tapasya is just the tapasya itself. There is nothing they get. Just Srimad Bhagavatam describes this impure state of consciousness as follows.
Someone may say that aside from devotees who always seek shelter at the Lord's lotus feet, there are those who are not devotees but who have accepted different processes for attaining salvation. What happens to them? In answer to this question, Lord Brahma and other demigods said, O lotus-eyed Lord, although non-devotees who accept severe austerities and penances to achieve the highest position may think themselves liberated, their intelligence is impure. They fall down from their position of imagined superiority because they have no regard for your lotus feet.
Thank you. So they fall down from their position because they have no regard of for your lotus feet. That means they don't follow the Shavasi principle. They don't know that everything should be connected to Krishna. They don't accept Krishna as a person, first of all. So naturally, they don't want to connect anything to him. So all these processes are included in bhakti, karma, jnana, and dhyana. So when and on another hand, if someone practices just one of these processes, he's practicing just this. If he's a jnani, he's a jnani. If he's an ashtanga yogi, he's just a yogi. But if someone is devotee, then automatically he practices all these processes. And this process of bhakti is very natural for the soul, very happy process, joyfully performed, as it's stated in Gita. Susukam kartum mavya. And bhakti is the only process who actually deals with the emotions, if you think about it. And the emotions are something very important for a human being. Actually, if you think about, we base our life mostly, most of the time, on emotions. Most of the people are like this. It's not so much on the intelligence.
You can see that from commercials. They're always on emotions. If you want to sell people something, you have to speak
yes.
to their emotions.
Yes, and you can see the movies also. Mm. They'll deal with emotions.
So don't the other processes like karma specifically, jnana excludes emotions, but karma doesn't it deal with emotions? Because like
not true.
Advertisement for people?
Not really, because in a sense that it doesn't bring the emotions to a higher understanding, to a spiritual level. It just uses the emotions as a driving force for performing karmas, pious activities. It uses them, but it actually doesn't really deal with them because it doesn't purify them. So they're just used. You know, you perform karma, you go to higher realms, and then you come back. And Dhyana and Jnana, they just ignore the emotions. The process of that's why for these two schools, only renunciants are accepted. Grihasthas are not allowed. Yeah. One of the reasons is that they just ignore this part of human nature. The emotions are just thrown out. But bhakti purifies the emotions and spiritualizes them. So they are. Bhakti takes emotions to the higher level, the spiritual level. The level of real emotional exchanges. So this is why bhakti can be performed, and simultaneously one can think of Krishna at the same time, can be absorbed in Krishna, because bhakti works on the principle of attachment to Krishna. So strong that in Bhagavatam it is mentioned that these advanced devotees, they are so absorbed in thoughts of Krishna that they don't even notice if they are dressed or naked. This is the example used. So absorbed, because they are so attached to Krishna. So this is the principle on which bhakti works, attachment to Krishna. And then all these disturbances, because in the material world there always will be disturbances and problems, all these things are just not important. They don't, they are not distractions for the mind. But these other processes like dhyana, ashtanga yoga, jnana, they work because they don't work on the principle of attachment to Krishna. Then there should be zero disturbances, otherwise it won't work. Like the jnanis, they are celibates, no disturbances from this part, and they don't do any work. They just sit and study. And if a scorpion comes, they are turning the pages of Vedanta Sutra and reading. If a scorpion comes and bites them, they should just continue turning the pages and reading. And Ashtanga Yogi, then he has to do Yama and Niyama, then Asana starts. Yama and Niyama, and Niyama is also done in connection with this no disturbances, because he lives regulated life, so there is no disturbances. He doesn't lie, he's not cheating, he's not stealing, so nobody comes to bother him. Then he's doing his asana, that means there will be no disturbances from the body, he won't get sick, there will be no pain. But then it goes further, because disturbances are, these are gross disturbances, but then there are disturbances coming from the mind also. And even when you breathe, breathing is disturbing the mind as well. So at one point he should stop breathing also. Then there are no disturbances whatsoever. And then he can focus on something. But the process of bhakti doesn't work like this. It just, the devotee is attached to Krishna, then he doesn't notice problems in the material world. Like if you are, I don't know if it happened to you, but let's say you bought a book that you really like, and you keep reading the book, and you read the whole day, and then you cannot sleep. At night you don't want to sleep. Normally you sleep every night, but you just keep reading the book, and you don't eat, you don't feel hungry, you're so absorbed in the book. It's so interesting. Or in a movie. Or whatever. In the same way, we are meant to be so absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Okay. Comments? So we'll continue with Mantra 10 Thursday.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare.
Shiva Prabhupada ki jai.